Hello, welcome to Star Wars Spelt Out. I'm your host, Josh Chapman, and today it's like a double thing from last week. It's like international / local guest, kind of international, but not really. Let's get him on here. It's like the second most known Tom in Star Wars podcasting. Swedish Tom? What do we prefer? Do you have a preferred title? Let's get him on, man.
Yeah, it's gone through a few iterations. I think at first I was referring to myself as not King Tom.
Yep.
And then people were like, come on, mate. You're a good Tom too. We can do better than that. And I was like, all right. I think it became Intercontinental Tom. But then, that's where it's at right now, Intercontinental Tom.
That's pretty flashy though, isn't it? That feels like a man of the world. it's one thing to be the king of somewhere, but intercontinental feels like that you're jet setting all over the place.
Yes, actually, if that's a second prize, it's a pretty good second prize, I have to say.
Well, you are jet setting all over the place, because like we've touched base, a while ago about coming on the podcast and guesting and stuff, but it's just you've been in an absolutely unfriendly time zone for however long, which is always hard to do. Like that European time zone is the trickiest to do guests, I think.
It really is. Obviously living there and trying to call my family from time to time, it is like depending on when you're awake. Like I'm a real night person, so I can call them maybe around midnight or one and still be pretty functional, and it's a pretty good time for them. But yeah, it doesn't work very. It's not for most other people. It's not that great.
Yeah, I've been asked to guest on the Scruffy Podcasters a couple of times, and shout out 200 episodes for them today. And it's just going, would you be up for recording it? I think it's like 6 a.m. on a Monday morning. I'm like, I can't do that. I think it depends on the time of year. Like I always judge it by when the soccer, like if the Premier League, if they've got like a game on at 9 p.m. in the evening, the time zones are pretty good. And then all of a sudden the first game doesn't start till midnight. You're like, this sucks. We're in this bad time zone.
It is.
So the thing is, the reason we got this together is because you're in Australia right now.
Yes, I am. It's been 5 years since I was back last. I was supposed to come back a bit earlier, but, worldwide event happened. And it's been 5 years, which is pretty crazy. I had this really weird feeling being back here of being like, everything is so familiar, but it feels really foreign at the same time. And I'm going around just being like, why is this like this? Why don't they have like, why are the bike lanes next to the trucks? How come the checkout people have to pack your shopping bags for you? I'm just like, there's all this like Australian stuff that I'm like confused by, even though I'm from here.
That was one of the weirdest things that happened to me when I first moved to England. Like the first week I was there, and I'd gotten a little room in Shepherd's Bush, and I was sort of getting the lay of the land, and I went up to the... must have been like a Morrison supermarket or something, whatever was in walking distance. And I got my shopping thing and I went up to the shopping thing, and then, loaded my stuff on it, and it all started going through the thing. And the lady like doing the doot, doot, she just looked at me and I looked at her, and she's like, oh, okay, I've got to do this. Do I?
Just going to stand there, are you?
And I'm like, okay, there's first mental note of things that happen in Europe. People won't pack your bags.
No, they don't. I at my local supermarket, they've got the blip gun system available, where you sign up for that, and then you pick up a little gun, and you walk around blipping stuff with the gun by yourself as you're shopping, and then
it just tallies it as it goes along, kind of thing.
Yeah, and then you just put your card in at the end, and you're off. So it's nice, and
you go, Matt.
It's a satisfying blip sound.
Yeah. Which, we've got Aldi in Australia, so people are used to the Aldi way of doing it. That was it's just like, all the stuff just comes through and you've got to frantically pack your trolley and stuff. But as far as the other sort of major supermarkets go here, everyone still expects someone to pack their bag for them. So
it's funny, isn't it?
I don't remember
what I mean, it's nice.
America.
It's a bit like old school feeling, I guess, to that. So,
There it is. So 5 years, that's a long time to be gone. So how long have you been How long have you been in Sweden for?
10 years.
Right.
So it was, I was in Japan for 10 years between 2000 and 2010. And then I was back here for about a year and a half. And and then I moved to Sweden.
You are into content.
To pursue rock and roll, rock and roll stardom. And so it's crazy that that amount of time has just gone like that. But that's how it is for everyone, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's cool. It's, and then you've just, you know, picked up Star Wars podcasts along the way, really. So is it just, do you listen to like particular, do you lean towards like Australian ones or international ones or British ones or just like, oh, I heard this one, I liked it. And then that person was on that person, I liked it. You know, like, oh, you're not going, I need a little taste of home. I need to hear an Australian accent every now and then.
Well, no, I listen to podcasts from everywhere, but I have to say that when I started to hear Steele's voice popping up on other Star Wars podcasts, I was like, "What the hell is this an Australian guy?" And so I got pretty interested in him just from that, and then of course started listening, and then because there's kind of a mini community around, not around him, but that so like you and Catherine and
offshoots,
the Canto Bike guys and Blue Harvest and Corey and everyone, like so it did like make me pay attention to Steele that he was from Australia. And I actually to this day I feel kind of like proud that he's out there doing like great stuff and being like someone we can all be kind of proud of,
flying the flag. It's weird because I've never really looked to see how many local Star Wars podcasts there are in Australia. Like there's kind of me. Steele is sort of international. He's almost intercontinental Steele because he's LA based now.
Yes. But another member club.
I think he'd still consider himself an Australian podcaster, I reckon. And then there's the Force Material guys who are in Brizzy.
Oh, I love them. And I love their podcast.
There's sort of 3 Men and a Baby Yoda, and those boys sort of, started up in Sydney. And and Catherine's is a bit more geek, bit everything focused and things as well. And Andy and Steph do Star Wars 101. They're friends of ours. They're sort of on and off. But I don't know. I've never really done a search of local ones. It's sort of weird. Like it's, even though there's like quite a big Star Wars fandom in Australia, I don't really look out that often. Oh, well, there's It's True All of It, which is Dale and Michael's one as well. But again, they're sort of people I know. I've never really had a look to see what else is out there, really. Sometimes you don't even look in your own backyard.
So for you, when it comes to Star Wars fandom, like how much of it is people you actually know in real life and how much of it is online?
Pretty much all of it's come from online.
Yeah, for me too.
None of it has been from people I've just met on the street or been in an event. Or anything. Yeah, I mean, it was kind of...
I know maybe like one or two people that I can really, really talk Star Wars with. But everything else is like, stuff that, people I, that I listen to online or whatever. Yeah.
Like I've got mates and, I've got some mates who are into Star Wars, but they wouldn't fly to Star Wars Celebration or anything. And my brother likes Star Wars and, we chat about if there's something new and, I've got some relatives and things. But it wasn't... I mean, the fandom... kind of came back in a bad way, big bad way when Disney took over and we got on the Force Awakens stuff. And I think that coincided obviously when Steele launched his podcast as well. And then that sort of brought people, because it would start off very Melbourne based because he was Melbourne based. So he would put live shows on and then you'd meet people at that. And, people like Catherine and Andy and those guys, we were just the ones who just kept turning up to everything. Occasionally there would be different random people who would be there, but pretty much we would always be just at the event. So that's sort of the people you would just sit with because they would be there.
So you see them often enough, you're like, okay.
Yeah, so you just see them often enough. And there's still people we catch up with and stuff. And obviously went to Star Wars Celebration and things. Now I've got to ask, Star Wars Celebration next year in Europe, is that a doable thing for a man who's European based?
Nah. I wish. It's a bit sad.
Come on, it's a few hours flight. I've flown to Stockholm before. It's not that far.
No, it's not far. But I like a bit of breaking international continental Tom news is that I'm actually looking at moving back to Australia. My bands in Sweden, except for one side project, all broke up, and I just haven't felt like driven to really do music for a while. The hunger for writing songs is kind of gone. Mm-hmm. And, stuck around in Sweden because I love it there, waiting for some inspiration to hit for what I can do next, but nothing's really happened. And I started to think, oh, is it time to head home? So that's actually what I'm looking at doing around the end of the year. So A, that's happening. B, I've been living on what's known as, you know, musician income for quite a long time. And it's a bit sad because I actually have been to Celebration once, and it was I went to Celebration Japan in 2008, I believe. Would you believe it? Like, it's crazy to look at myself now and think this, but so I had a friend in Japan called Mickey. I called her Mickey the Hutt, and she was like my Star Wars friend in Japan. Mm-hmm. And she said, hey, did you hear about this Star Wars Celebration thing coming up? Now, keep in mind, this is before the online fandom was there was almost nothing there. There was the Rebel Scum forums and stuff, but there mm-hmm. wasn't much else.
The Force.net, right? And all those kind of things.
Yeah, right. And I was a bit involved with that stuff at that time, but it wasn't like I was there on a daily basis or anything. I loved Star Wars, but it, to me, that this whole like fandom that we know now was not there, and I wasn't really a part of it. And so when she told me like, oh, there's this Star Wars Celebration thing going to happen, we should go. You know what my response was? Yeah, I don't know, man.
Sounds like it's a bit of a hassle, but you don't know what, like, you know, especially in 2008, you're just like, well, what is it? Is it like a couple of people like in a hall hanging out? Like,
exactly.
What is it?
I just thought, like, really, am I going to just stand around for 3 days with like a bunch of like
randos,
people just being like, do you like Luke Skywalker? I also like Luke Skywalker. It just felt like, I don't know, is this necessary? It's very expensive. I don't know. And she just said, Tom. Because I was actually like between jobs at the time. So mm-hmm. again, like it was a bit of a financial thing. She said, Tom, I will pay for your 3-day ticket. And you can pay me back once you're able to. But we are going to that thing. And I was like, all right, fine, I'll go. And I had 3 of the best days of my entire life. It was magical. I just loved it.
I haven't spoken to anybody who's been there in person, I don't think. Like everybody that sort of we kick around with, you know, a lot of them went to Orlando.
Yep.
And a few to London, and then obviously mostly cool. Chicago and then Anaheim the last couple of ones. Like, do you look at sort of the social stuff at something like Anaheim and go, oh, that's just like way, way more intense than it was in Japan? Or was it still reasonably like a normal size convention? Was it still quite big there?
It was big. I can't remember the numbers on the attendance, but it's Tokyo, so it was big. Yeah. And it was, you know, like, so as we just said, you have friends who like Star Wars, but the time limit on how long they can handle talking about Star Wars is pretty limited for most people,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
5, 10 if you're very lucky, right? Minutes talking. Yep. So one of the things I loved about being there was that you're in an environment where it's not just acceptable, but it's expected for you to be talking about Star Wars for hours every single day. And I just loved the freedom of like, I can just talk about Star Wars. And they were just so, like, I just had so many awesome experiences. One of the photo ops available was the two Darths. So it was David Prowse and Ray Park together.
Nice. Yep.
So we did that one, Mickey and I. And we also did Mark Hamill and...
Hamill was there as well.
Oh, it was awesome. So, like, just, like, man, he's great. Like, we had this... So he's... Do you know an animated show called Metalocalypse?
No, I don't know that one. I know he does a lot of voices and stuff, but...
Yeah, okay. So it's a heavy metal-based, like, adult animated show, right? And he's been on the show. So as they were taking the photo, I did the, you know, the classic heavy metal devil horns thing and said, Death Clock, which is the band from that show. And he looked at my hand and goes, like, quick, like, is that a gang sign?
He's like, uh-oh.
He was awesome. And what was very funny is that when he did his, like, panel, you know, you're sitting there with thousands of Japanese people, most of whom, you know, not super great with English.
Yeah.
So they would ask him a question. He would answer the question. The translator would then translate what he said, you know. And so he would say something funny because he's Mark Hamill. And I
you're just the one guy like Homer in the crowd. Like,
yeah, like laughing very like dorkily by myself. And then they would translate it. And then like the 8,000
I was just
going to
ask about the language stuff in Japan. So it was sort of everything was in English by default and then just translated from then on for the most part. If it was an English speaking person, it would just be translated at the...
Yeah, they had a translator on stage,
nice.
Doing on the microphone. Yeah,
I wonder if they'll go back because we always sort of like we joked all the way through Anaheim, going they should bring it to Australia. Why don't they bring it to Australia? You know, we should do it. Da da da. We always kind of like Japan might be the most realistic. You know, maybe they'll go back to Japan and Asia and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just every time you go. You know what? You keep saying that, but then when you actually like get to Celebration, you look at the logistical thing. It's like there's no way they're taking this to Australia. Like just even getting guests to come all that way. Like unless they were actually filming something there at that time, where it was like, well, you know, the cast of whatever Andor season two are all here, so we can wheel all them out because they're already here, and there'll be enough photos and panels and stuff to fill it. But it's like they're not all going to fly. It's such a monster flight to come all the way, like even from LA, you know, that's why Ewan McGregor was there every day because it's just down the road from where he lived, probably. So,
precisely, yeah. And I mean, to be honest, like with the number of Australians who've been in Star Wars, you could do a pretty hot little convention, Bruce Spence, bit of a
Well, you know, you got your Joel Edgerton's. It was the, you know, the 20th anniversary of Attack of the Clones, so you could have wheeled out all those Australian, you know, your Rose Burns and your Joel Edgerton's, and your,
there you go.
Jack Thompson's still alive, I reckon. Jeez, I don't even know.
I haven't heard that he's dead, so I reckon he might.
I hope I haven't just grim reaped him. I won't. I'll look it up afterwards and have a look at that. Look, we're sort of making the trek to London. That's the plan to do it to go back and do it all again. So
that's great.
It's going to be a slightly different vibe again because there'll be probably not as many Americans there, but it'll be more of the European contingent and things, and there'll be a few hardcore Americans who come over.
Sure. So, I'm a bit jealous. Like, of course, I would love to be there, just to be there. But I'm a bit jealous. Like, in a way, you get to hang out with this whole, you know, gang that this little community that has pulled together. It must be so fun to all be together.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And it was a funny one when we went to Chicago because we had the, you know, we had the sort of the online stuff, but we never really met. You know, we knew Steel and we're like, well, that's great, but he's not going to want to hang around. He's got shit to do. He's not going to hang around with us the whole time. So we were kind of just hoping that, well, we hope everybody likes us and they want to hang around with us. And that was the case. Like we got to Chicago and everybody socialized and it was great. So it meant that when we went to Anaheim, it wasn't even a question. It was just like, all right, great. Well, we'll see this person, and this person. And then we brought a few extra, you know, and you kind of get people who were there who come along as well, who you didn't meet last time as well. So I assumed that, you know, if you'd been there at Europe, we would just been like, wow, we've got international Tom, you know, we've got King Tom, we've got intercontinental Tom, we'll just come in and take the spot. And
That would have been great.
Out one Tom, in another. But I think they're going to just, I mean, this one just sold so quickly again. They're just going to do it on a yearly basis now. I just can't see any reason why they wouldn't. They'll just keep doing it yearly. Whether it means we can get to go every year, but it was just weird because we did Chicago and then we were G'd up to go the next year and then the pandemic hit. So we had 3 years where we were waiting and now all of a sudden it's like, 8 months later, we've got to go around again or 9 months later.
Yeah, it's still a bit like exhausted from the last one.
Yeah, especially when you've got to go all the way to London, but I'm excited to go back to Europe. So I haven't been back since I moved away. So I was similar to you. I was, you know, overseas for a long time and eventually made the decision to come back. And it's a tough decision. And you keep thinking about the packing your bag up for the last time and leaving your flat.
But, hopefully you get some fun guests and stuff on the panels, you know, since there's such a huge number of the, you know, the in front of camera and behind the camera people are, yeah. are British, you know, like could be really fun.
Yeah, look, I think it'd be a great one. And I think they're shooting Andor in London, or they at least shot the first series there. So I'll have a lot of that. And there'll be plenty on at the moment. It's just a continual cycle of stuff, really. It just doesn't feel like it ends. It's kind of weird. Like, I think you're from the same old school thing of me of like, well, we had three movies and then we had nothing for 20 years. Even when we had the prequels, there were 3 years of waiting around for stuff.
It's funny how quickly I switched, though. Like, I just remember, like, you know, when we were getting that one movie a year for that five-year period, I was just like, man, I could do a movie every 3 months. I would love that, to be
like
honest.
Like a Marvel sort of thing, just like, oh, they'll give you three or four every year, yeah.
Man, I would eat it up, you know. But even like I really felt it after the Rise of Skywalker, and we weren't going to get another one for a while. I just was like, man, I miss that. And like, you know, being in Sweden, it's winter at the end of the year. I love that feeling of like it's cold. You've got all your layers on. You've got your gloves and your scarf and everything, and you start to see the posters go up in the tram stops and whatnot, and you're just like, here comes the next Star Wars movie. I really missed that that feeling for
sure. The Swedes like come out for it for Star Wars?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean it's easy to forget how small the population of Sweden is. Stockholm is about the population of Adelaide, I would say. And the city where I live, Gothenburg, is only about 600,000.
Yeah, right.
So everything's scaled down a bit. But yeah, I mean, for that opening day, you turn up and there's people, I guess they've been arranged by the cinema to be in the lobby, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So you're just there with like
a stormtrooper.
Yeah, it's super nice, you know?
Yeah. Stockholm's, yeah. I went to Sweden when I was over in Europe. It was beautiful. Yeah, Stockholm was great. It's just, I mean, Sweden is just like, wow, good looking person. It's right. Just the average. It was really weird because I went to Latvia and then I went to Sweden. It's kind of weird because one, they're like 20 minute flight or half an hour flight from each other. But Latvia's old school Eastern Bloc kind of, you know, you go in, the history is like, oh, this is the people who invaded us. And then these are the next people who invaded us. And these are the next people who invaded us. It's like they've got this really sort of history. And then you go into Sweden, which is completely different. I was like, oh, you know, Latvia would have these sort of extremely beautiful Eastern European people. You know, you see a few of them, like, oh, my goodness. And then you go to Sweden, it's like, oh, everyone's just good looking. It's just like across the board walking around. Yeah. But
it's this kind of like stereotype that people have, but it's actually correct.
It's absolutely true. And it's just like, but
even the cops are good looking. Seriously, sometimes I'll walk past a couple of cops on the street and I'm just like, look at these two. They look like models who were dressed up as cops for the day. It's pretty nice.
It did cost me 15 euros for a glass of red wine, though, I remember, in Stockholm, whatever it was.
When were you there?
It would have been 2000 and maybe 11, maybe 2010,
all right.
2011. I'd have to double check.
I think if you went there now, you would be like, wow, this place is cheap.
Really? The rest of the world
I've
caught
been
up.
Blown away by Australia and how expensive it is.
Oh, that killed me as well. Coming back to Australia, I used to come back at Christmases and stuff and just go like,
yeah,
oh, it's $13 for a pint of beer. I was like, wow, I was still getting a £3 pint of beer in London. Yeah. So I know some people are worried about London, how expensive it'll be, but I think it'll be comparable. LA was just felt comparable to Australia, to be honest.
Yep.
So what's looking forward on your Star Wars calendar here? Like we've just parked here. Kenobi. Kenobi's all finished now. Did you see all of Kenobi back in Europe, or are you back in Australia when any of it dropped?
I was here. Yeah, I've been here 3.5 months.
Oh, right. So you've been getting the 5 PM release times.
Yes, actually. Pretty nice. So in Sweden, it's about a 9:30 a.m. Okay. release. And so my standard approach there is to get up. I'm very particular about watching conditions. I don't like any light in the room. It freaks me out that Steele will sit there in a brightly lit room watching new episodes of Star Wars on a computer screen. I'm like, Steele, come on, buddy.
Slave to the content. I know.
Yeah, he's doing it for us, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, has to be like dead silent room. Not dead silent. Totally blacked out room and everything. So I get up, put the big like Duna covers over the windows to make it extra dark. And it's such a cool feeling actually at that time of day. It's that total like Saturday morning cartoon feeling.
Yeah, right.
You're just like, I'm in my pajamas. I'm going to sit down and watch some Star Wars. It's awesome. And then you're like, you watch it and then you have to get on with your day, obviously. But you're smiling all day because you just saw a new Star Wars and you know that you can watch it again as soon as you finish whatever you have to do that day. And it's great. But it has been cool here to watch Kenobi at that time of day as well. Nice that my brother also cares about audiovisual presentation. Right, yeah. And he actually has so I live in, a tiny apartment in Gothenburg. So the sound is... it's just the TV, and it's fine, But my brother's got a proper sound system, so it's pretty nice to hear that.
Like, let's crank it up. Let's get some treble. Let's get some bass going on here. And let's
The bass is the difference, really. Absolutely, yeah. So that's been cool. But as for what I'm looking forward to, it's all about Andor for me. As soon as they announced it, I thought that's a killer concept. Obviously, the era, I love that era.
Mm-hmm.
So from the beginning, I was really into the whole idea. I thought, because it's in the era that it's in, all your major players are on the board, really.
Yeah.
Yep. The Emperor's around, Vader's around, Tarkin's around, Krennic's around, they're all there. And, and then, of course, we know that Mon Mothma's going to be in there. Saw Gerrera, for example. There's so many possibilities. Not that just, characters you already like turning up is the main thing.
Yeah.
But it's still, it's exciting. And then when that trailer dropped, I was just like, oh. To me, that for sure was my favorite trailer of any of the Star Wars TV shows so far. I just thought it looks amazing. Because that's one of the major kind of things that I really like all the Star Wars TV that we've had, but I do feel it is affected by the TV budget.
Mm-hmm.
Or that look. And some episodes really fly past that and it's totally fine. And then some other episodes, I feel like I'm more affected by that. But to me, that Andor trailer was the most cinematic looking that Star Wars has been on the small screen so far.
Yeah, and I think they've actually done a lot more of that, a bit more old school. So a bit more soundstage.
Yeah, it's not on the volume.
So exactly. I just think that they just didn't either have the volume there or they're just like, hey, we're just going to... They've got all this studio space in Britain and they've just done it a bit more old school. So I'd be curious to see. Yeah, it was... Because we didn't really know, Catherine Neen, our friend Catherine, is the resident...
What's up, Catherine Neen? I'm a fan of your fandom.
As we all are. She's the go-to on it. But she's excited for the show, but she only knew what we knew, and we didn't really know what the tone was and what exactly we were, what is this all about? Is it just about a young Cassian Andor joining the rebellion? But the scale of it and the the time period, like you said, is really interesting because it's hinted in Kenobi. It's basically seems to be that the Empire is sort of transitioning from this thing because they didn't automatically just go from hey, we're just gonna. Because they're still the government. So they're basically trying to pretend to be the government. So they're just trying to...
Yes.
They didn't just immediately turn around and start kicking heads. They obviously brought some stuff in to say, hey, in order to keep the peace, we need these troopers and we need the army to do certain things. And it seems like 10 years in, they've gone, all right, we've kind of effectively got rid of the Jedi, the people who can cause us the most trouble. Now we can start sort of pushing people around and achieving our goals and what exactly that means and, getting a tighter grip on everybody. And that's just kind of fascinating before, because it's not like they, the, you know, A New Hope is basically what, you know, with the Death Star is kind of the end game, where it's just like, all right, this is how we're going to control everybody because we've got this great big floating gun that can keep everybody in check. But before that, we're just sort of, you know, before we're just kind of pushing people around. So it's really fascinating. I'm really looking forward to it. And
that aspect of it is going to be awesome. And the fact that you have like Mon Mothma and the Senate and stuff, and seeing how that world starts to change as the Empire tightens the screws. I think that's fantastic.
It's just like, well, technically you're in government, but you're not really. You're just sort of...
Yeah, exactly. And it's quite interesting. Like, so Tony Gilroy, who I guess he's the guy in charge, right? Mm.
Yeah.
He, you know, he famously said, I'm not really a Star Wars fan, you know. They brought me on, I did what I thought was best, and, you know, his contributions to Rogue One are generally considered to be pretty good. So I think what's kind of cool about having someone like that doing a show like this is he's not the kind of guy who's going to just put two, like, characters that you already like in space and go, eh?
He doesn't, right? he doesn't care. He's just like, hey,
look at this.
He doesn't care if the guys from the cantina turn up. Like,
he's not going to be I don't think he's going to feel like, yeah, I'm like, this is television here. I feel like he's going to be like, this has to have plot. It has to have intrigue. You have to have questions that you want answered, and then these questions get answered later in the series. And that's at least what I'm imagining.
Well, it's a weird thing because it was like, you know, after, you know, because like Taika Waititi's doing all this press for Thor, you know, and the Thor movies obviously divided people. Some people love it, some people hate it. And of course, subsequently, when something doesn't land for some people, it's all like, oh, does he deserve to do Star Wars? Is he going to ruin Star Wars? Blah, blah, blah. And then there was that thing where he was making the joking about how he was asked Natalie Portman if she'd ever want to be in Star Wars. Whether he was serious or not, who really cares? But there's sort of that question of like, oh my God, well, he doesn't know anything about Star Wars. He doesn't deserve to do it, da, 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 da. And it's just like, well, does it really matter if it's somebody who's a massive fan of Star Wars as opposed to someone who can just make really good... I mean, like, Irvin Kershner made the best Star Wars movie, in my opinion. He didn't know jack shit about Star Wars. He'd seen Star Wars, and that was about it.
Yep. Exactly.
And he has that thing where he's like, well, I knew I had to do comedy without... And I didn't want to have jokes. And I knew I had to do romance, but I couldn't do kissing. And you know what I mean? Like, he was like, well, I understand how the language of cinema works and how I have to convey this thing. Like, Tony Gilroy is a perfect example. He's like, well, I can give two craps about Star Wars, but I know what makes things exciting. And, you know, I got brought in to change the ending of Rogue One because, for whatever reason, it wasn't exciting enough. They didn't. We never really know what happened there. I have a feeling it might have just been a little bit too dark and a bit bleak. But who knows?
That tends to be like what people are like thinking was the issue. But it's a bit sad that we're potentially never going to know.
Bring him out. Just bring out those. Who cares? Bring the director's cuts. Do the assembly cuts. Who cares? Like, you've got Disney Plus. Like, would it tarnish Star Wars? Like,
I think the fandom can be so vicious that they just don't want to like reveal any chinks in the armor at all. But I mean, like, have you read the those amazing Rinzler making of books for the original trilogy?
I've read Star Wars and Empire. I haven't read Return of the Jedi.
Okay, so you've read the Empire one.
Yeah, I love that, where it's like, where's Carrie Fisher? She was out with the Rolling Stones last night. No one's seen her.
Yeah.
She'll turn up at some stage. That's the kind of shit in those books, which is amazing.
It's true. Like, those books have that stuff in them. And it's like, there's
only
one,
like 20 years old, Carrie Fisher or something. She's like, yeah, of course she's out partying with the Rolling Stones.
Of course. Yeah. There's one, like, it's a word-by-word transcription of a tape recording of Kershner, Harrison Ford, and Carrie Fisher on the Bespin carbon freezing chamber set, and it's a full blown argument, and it's transcribed word for word, and it's like, wow, I can't believe A, that they have this, like, and B, that like, yeah, put it in the book, why not? So I don't see that really happening for the Disney stuff, but you never know.
But that's the best.
It could be.
Like that Phantom Menace.
Like 20 years down the line, maybe people go, oh, who cares anymore?
Yeah,
like,
well, the Phantom Menace documentary is the best Star Wars documentary because it's like, you know, George Lucas going into a room going, I want to do this, then they're all looking at him like he's insane. Like, and getting to the end of the movie, he's just going, oh shit, I think I've gone too far here. Like, I think I've literally got, like, what have I done? Like, yeah. This thing is falling under its own weight. And he wasn't, you know, he was just like, yeah, put it out. Who cares? I mean, there's a facet. I think The Force Awakens, I mean, they've all got, I think, you know, like Last Jedi seems to be obviously the smoothest production
right.
of any of those Star Wars things. It basically didn't, you know, Mark Hamill didn't really like what they did with Luke Skywalker at the start, but he seemed to have gotten over that. And that was about the only bump in the road. Like Force Awakens, Harrison Ford breaks his leg. They rewrite a bunch of stuff. You know, Rise of Skywalker, they sack the director. They bring in JJ. They're frantically rewriting, it seems like, up until like after they're even shooting it. They're just kind of throwing stuff at the wall. Solo, obviously, Rogue One. It's kind of funny that there's really only been one that hasn't really had a blip on it.
Yeah. I mean, people obviously have often point out that, I mean, this maybe is the business and you just don't hear about it because nobody cares what, like, Jungle Runner, you know, goes up on behind the scenes of like these like small movies that people don't care that much about. And I love all five of the new films. And so I'm happy, but you can't deny that that's a pretty interesting track record that there's been that many issues.
But is there issues?
Like, know, is maybe it's just
most,
bad luck.
Is it most movies though? Care because we only care about what happens on Star Wars movies.
Yeah, I think that's a big, that's absolutely a big part of it. Absolutely. Yeah.
That, so, you know, you always sort of hear, sometimes you hear, unless the absolute train wreck ones are the ones you don't hear about, but it's like, you know, Marvel's got plenty of movies where stuff, you know, sacked directors and they've changed things.
Right, they've had stuff like that happen as well.
Just the nature of the industry, I think. But yeah, again, it's only interesting, but it's Star Wars.
Sure. So do you, like, going forward, I think it's interesting that, like, I have to say, I don't envy Lucasfilm and whoever has to decide how they are going to go forward cinematically.
Mm-hmm.
Because me personally, when I think of, okay, Tom, hand you the keys to Star Wars, you get to decide what comes next on the big screen, what you're going to do. I go, I don't know. Like,
well,
I literally,
thanks for coming, Tom. You just blew your Star Wars audition.
Like, everything I think of, I go, yeah, I don't know if that can work because blah, 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 or whatever. Like, you know, when I think of, I think part of the problem, and this is a good problem to have, but part of the problem of Star Wars is that the struggle between, let's say, like, Palpatine and the good guys, just to generalize it, you know, because it becomes the Empire and the Rebellion. But if you look at the whole saga, it's Palpatine versus the good guys. If you look at that, you literally created the most epic good versus evil battle that could possibly exist. It's like a war for the soul of humanity going on in front of your eyes, which is part of why it feels so important, why it feels so epic. And then, okay, you've like finished that. Let's say Palpatine is actually gone. You never know, but let's just say he is.
Yep.
What can you possibly do after that?
Yeah.
And there is, you know, I remember, okay, I want to ask you about this. Do you remember the day that it was announced that Lucasfilm being sold to Disney, 7, 8, and 9 are coming? Do you remember that announcement and exactly what your reaction was?
I was, and that was 2012, wasn't it? I think.
Yeah.
I was in London. I was working in London at Barclays Bank, I think, when I was working there. And yeah, I think it just came up on Twitter or something like that. I think I had access to Twitter at work for whatever reason. Which isn't like most workplaces, but for whatever reason, I did have access to Twitter and it came up on that. Yeah. And just being kind of just looking at it going, oh, like I didn't really even know that it was a thing that was for sale. You know what I mean? Like it was more the fact that it had been sold, it just seemed weird. Like oh, I didn't.
Yeah.
And I'd already sort of resigned to the fact that there probably would be no more Star Wars movies.
Right.
I think the Clone Wars was still going or maybe just finished. Yeah. So that was kind of, you know, so I was checking in, like Revenge of the Sith had come out while I was in London. The first year I was in London, it came out in 2005. And, you know, so that was like 7 years or whatever by, you know, had passed since then. And, you know, they'd had sporadic things. Yep. But it was like, oh, there's a Star Wars show, I'll watch it. But it wasn't really something that was in my headcanon. Yep. And then I was like, oh, wow, they're doing 7, 8, 9. You know, and I had to kind of think about like okay, wow. So, you know, because I was sort of, I'd read some of those books and stuff as well. But yeah, I just kind of, I guess I probably just thought that the end of 6, like, it said everything that had to be said. And then they managed to do 3 more films, you know, and kind of extend the story and stuff like that with new characters.
Because
I feel like that they've closed out. I mean, as far as like moving forward, like, I mean, they've closed out the stories of the original, you know, of your Han, your Lukes and your Leias and stuff like that. But your Rey, Finn and Poe feel like they're still kind of getting started. So I guess if it overlaps at a point where you go like, all right, you got 1 to 9, and then you've got a crossover in 7, 8, 9, and then you move forward. But I mean, I think that they should be going forward cinematically with those characters, but you've got to obviously get the actors to commit to all of that again, which is very hard to do. I don't know. I'm really curious about movie stuff. I'm just like you said, like what do you do? Like they kind of went, oh, Rogue Squadron. Okay, well that's just a safe
cool idea.
It's a cool idea, but it's a spin-off. What does it mean? It doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah, exactly. It just is going to be a fun like gap.
And can you just do it? Like, couldn't you just do it as a show? Like, does it need to be a
movie? I think that X-wing like dogfighting action stuff is expensive. I reckon they have to.
Yeah, well, maybe that is the case too. And then like the Taika Waititi one, you're just like, well. He's come out and said, well, I'm not doing something about Chewbacca's dad.
Right.
Or, you know, I don't want to, which is interesting, which is cool. Because like, all right, well, you've either got to go way back. I don't think you can go forward because they're still very conscious about like, we don't want to screw the pooch on Rey, Finn and Poe until we know what they're going to do. So unless he's secretly be going, I'm doing episode 10 all along. Ha ha. Taika Waititi's pulled another swift one. I've been doing episode 10 all along, and it's going to be Oscar Isaac, Daisy Ridley, and they're all coming back. Great. Bring it on. I'm all for it. You know, who knows? You know, all we know is making a Star Wars. He's making a Star Wars movie. Don't believe anything else that comes out of his mouth because he's the king of misdirect.
Yes.
Or you got to, like you said, you've either go way off to the side to some other thing. Like then it's just like a Star Wars story. It's a story set in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
Maybe it's more like a Visions or something. It's just like an offshoot. But
yes.
Or you go way back. You go Knights of the Old Republic or whatever you do, High Republic. Or
oh my god, those Knights of the Old Republic people. How would they react if they actually did Knights of the Old Republic, but with Taika Waititi's sense of humor? They're like, where's my cool, dark, edgy?
They take that stuff very seriously.
Yeah, they do. I don't think that would be. I don't know. I mean, yeah. Because, like, okay, when that announcement was made about Lucasfilm being sold to Disney, my reaction was absolute elation. I felt, it's not just making my Star Wars life better. This makes my entire life better. I'm pumped. This is amazing. But my second thought was, but the story's done. Like, Return of the Jedi is the most perfect, uplifting, wonderful ending to a story, and the good guys won. Like, what story could there possibly be?
I mean, I always thought of the books. I was like, well, they've kind of already nutted all that out in the books. Like, are they going to go after the books, or are they going to ignore the books, or what? Whatever. I kind of went because they specifically said 7, 8, 9. I'm like, all right, well, it's going to have some connection to some of the other ones. And, you know, at that stage, you know, Carrie Fisher, Harrison Ford and Mark Hamill were all alive. You would think you'd bring them in some capacity. I'm just trying to remember. They announced 7, but they didn't say anything about directors or anything at the same time. It was more like, hey, we've bought Lucasfilm and we're going to make episode 7 in 2015 or whatever it was. And that's what's happening. Like, that was as far as it went. I have to look it up.
I think they did say 7, 8, 9, but as you said, I don't think they had directors or anything. But I don't know, like going forward, because one of the things that the sequel films did so amazingly well is create new characters that people immediately cared about. Like, I mean, I've been a Star Wars fan for, you know, 40 something years at this point, and like Rey within half an hour of being on screen, I was like, she's one of my favorite characters already. Like, I just found her so like charming and likable and relatable and just cool, funny. You know, Finn, I mean, her and Finn's chemistry was incredible. You know, Poe's cool. It was all like, I think it, that's a near impossibility. You think about the weight of the, like, the, you know, Han, Leia, Chewie, you know, and Luke Skywalker, and you're like, you got to put characters on screen that can compete with these guys, and they actually managed it, which is a miracle.
Well,
you know,
it's a, so it's a trick that they've tried that has been, you know, like they talk about the soft reboot now, and Force Awakens kind of was the template for that, of bringing back a franchise with established characters but also new characters to basically pick it up and run with it. You know, they've tried you know, with for varying degrees of success in other stuff, whether it's Ghostbusters or I don't know. I'm just trying to think of other examples off the top of my head, but there's been a few of those where it's just like, even like Jurassic Park, of that kind of, like, well, we're bringing it back. We're bringing back the legacy characters, but we're also bringing, you know, with varying levels of degrees of success. But like I said, like those, that core trio of characters could easily carry another trilogy.
For sure.
And you wouldn't need to worry about the baggage of Harrison Ford, you know, Leia and Luke anymore. Like, okay, granted, you could, you know, Hamill was up for it and he usually is up for everything. You could do Ghost Luke again if you really needed to, but I don't think anybody would be like, well, Harrison Ford's not, you know, he, you know, he's done and, like, you know, Carrie's passed on now. Like, they could, they've got enough of a core fan base where you could just pick it up and go like, all right, episode 10's coming out, and it's going to be the further adventures of these guys.
I just think that, like, the problems that you face are like this. You've had the Skywalker saga. It is the ultimate battle of good and evil. Palpatine is basically the most, like, you know, the most iconic big bad you could possibly have. At that point, you need to give the galaxy a break. I think that the galaxy needs to be at peace. I want to say 10 years because I want to see those characters back sooner rather than later. But to be honest, I think, storytelling wise, it would be better to let it sit for 20 to 30 years. So you have earned at least 20 to 30 years of peace after all this, all this, like, unbelievable galactic warfare that's been going on. And then you bring in a new threat. But I don't want to wait another 20 years.
You don't
want to
wait
to see these characters
to get in her 50s until you're satisfied.
I just, like, I love those characters. Like, I'm so ready to have them come back, you know.
Well, that's the question, because you can, you know, because they bring them back now. So it's like that they've gone, all right, well, we can't progress the story further than 9 at the moment, but we've got all these other Star Wars properties. It's like, hey, you like Luke Skywalker? Luke Skywalker's in The Mandalorian. We'd like, we're just basically, you know, we're going back and we're plugging holes. Hey, you like Obi-Wan Kenobi? Yes. We've gone and we've put Obi-Wan Kenobi in this thing. So you could conceivably go, episode 10 is going to be set 100 years in the future. And it's going to be a whole new set of things. But, hey, you like Rey? We're still going to tell Rey's story on the Rey show on Disney Plus. But but is it wasted? It's just like, well, do you want the main, you know, the movie is still like the thing that progresses the story further. And then, you know, do you do that? But all of a sudden you're making prequel sequels all over again because you've committed to, like, clean slate this story 100 years in the future as your new timeline, where they go, oh yes, well, there was a great Jedi named Rey and she had a Jedi Academy and that's why we have the Jedis today, and you might learn about her one day in the Rey series coming on Disney Plus in 2031 or whatever. And yeah, it's I'd love to sit on the whiteboard, the big whiteboard they've got down there at Lucasfilm with all the...
I just think that's like an impossible task almost, like, to sit there and go, like, what do we do? It's like, yeah, so I'm not envious of the people whose job it is to actually finally go, right, this is it, this is what we're doing. But one thing that I thought about is and a concept that was in The Rise of Skywalker that, you know, was not fleshed out enough at all, or I would say, but that I loved and would love to see more of, is this idea of the Sith occultists. And obviously, when you see the destruction of Palpatine and stuff in that, it seems like most of them...
got a few rocks to the face.
Got a few rocks to the face. But I have to assume some survived, right? So I would love to see them return, partly because it appeals to my heavy metal sensibilities of people in robes, you know. love that.
Some good robe work and, there.
Yeah, because, like, think about this. Like, do you think people are going to be happy to go see Star Wars movies where there isn't someone with a red lightsaber for the hero to fight? I think it kind of has to be there. And that way you can go like, all right, they're not Sith Lords. It's not the rule of two, but they were they're occultists who have been studying this stuff on their own for whatever, the last 20 years or something, since the fall of Exegol and all that stuff. And now they're coming to wreak, you know, whatever in the galaxy. Oh, I would be into that, you know.
Yep. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I know that's why they're plugging gaps and doing not safe stuff, but, you know, like, you know, stuff that they know people want to doing see. That. But yeah, because they're kind of in this. They're not snookered, but as soon as they make a massive commitment like that, story wise, you basically can't. There's sort of no way back. You're basically going to stick. So I think that the Taika Waititi one is the most fascinating, because it will really be whether it's just an offshoot, or if it goes back, or if it does go forward. I think it'll probably go. I think it'll probably go sideways. I think it'll be a story in an era that we already know, but it'll be removed from everything that we know. So it'll be like, it's going to be, you know, like a, you know, a New Hope classic trilogy time, but it'll be separated. So it's like, well, it doesn't actually touch any of the characters and stuff we know. I don't know how that works story-wise. I'll leave that to smarter people than me. I don't know, because otherwise it's just like, well, we're going to commit all our future stuff on this movie as far as like establishing timelines. But I don't know.
It's tricky, isn't it? I'm a huge fan of him and of his films. So I think the humor of Star Wars is one of the things I like the most, actually. And I think that you can push that a little further and still have it feel like Star Wars. So yeah, I'm looking forward to whatever he ends up doing. But it's one of those things where I love that not a single person on the planet has any idea what that could be.
Yeah, it's probably like him, the lady who he's co-writing it with, and Kathy Kennedy, and it would. Yeah, I think D23 is up in a few weeks, which is like the Disney convention. So maybe they'll get something more then. But it's like, who knows? Like I don't even remember when Force Awakens came out, how much we really knew. Even when they announced it, like, I know that they sort of, even the cast and stuff, we didn't really know. Like, we sort of said, oh yeah, you know, classic characters are coming back, but we didn't know who Daisy Ridley was or anything like that, you know, which always makes for some amusing fan created posters where people just kind of guess.
Oh, there were some weird ones, weren't
there? Yeah. I always love a few of those sort of wacky posters and stuff, which is always good. Mate, we're running around the end here. Have you got anything that's on your mind that's pressing that you want to?
I'm reading Shadow of the Sith.
How is that?
It's good.
Is it making?
To be honest,
is it making Rise of Skywalker more sort of fleshed out? Is it sort of?
Yes, and that's a big part of what I'm loving about it. Just them referencing this stuff. Because I love that trilogy, and I have a great hunger for more of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And just for them to mention this stuff even, I kind of feel happy. But yeah, it is. And like, do I need all that stuff explained in a clearer way? I don't need it. I really like The Rise of Skywalker, and there's a bunch of messiness in the storytelling. I understand that. But if you just go, yep, all right, it happened how it happened, hand wave, then I still have the best time. But this isn't hurting. It's nice to to see those pieces. Because one thing that is very confusing, you're like, hang on, that's Ochi's ship. But you see the flashback of Rey going, don't go, looking up. But if that's Ochi's ship leaving, why would she think her parents? It's quite confusing. So I'm only halfway. No, I'm about three quarters of the way through. So it's kind of cool.
What's Luke like in the book? Is he closer to Last Jedi Luke, or is he closer to Return to Jedi Luke, or is he like he's been around the block a few times by the time this book's sort of rolled around, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's actually pretty far towards The Force Awakens at that point, I think. Yeah. Right? Yeah. No, he's not. He doesn't seem bitter or defeated at all yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Does he ever actually get a Jedi like out of the academy? Because he's sort of, it's established that he's training Grogu does he actually ever get one successful candidate out?
Isn't that a big question though, that it's like kind of left hanging as well? Because that, like, isn't the line like, he took half a dozen of my students when Kylo Ren destroyed his temple. He took half a dozen of my students and left, right? Who were they? What ended up happening to them?
Yeah.
It's not the Knights of Ren. They're something else.
But it's suggested that he's been doing it for like 20 years by the time he gets around to Force Awakens. By the time that goes, at least, like, where are they all? Like, did every one of them flunk out? Or is it a 20-year course? Is it like doing a PhD and then another PhD afterwards?
Dude, I got to say, like, you know, the Clone Wars is, of course, a well-loved show, and I like it very much. That, like, the prequel era is not my favorite. And so even, like, the Clone Wars, when it's, like, hitting on, you know, when it's running on all cylinders, I'm having a good time, but I'm held back a little bit because of, like, it's, like, aesthetically, it's not exactly what I love about Star Wars, the designs and stuff. If they were to do like a top shelf, high quality animated show of that whole period and Luke's students and the deterioration of Luke and Ben's relationship, I would eat that up, man. I would totally love that.
It's because it's sort of established that, you know, Luke is the last Jedi. Even though he spent all that time training Jedi. So what happened to them all?
None
of them made it out. But were they all students all that time? Or has something happened previous to that where, you know, he had a bunch of grads and they all got wiped out for whatever reason or moved on? Or like, there's quite some interesting stuff that they could play on that. But who knows? Yeah. Maybe we'll find it in Taika Waititi's movie.
Who knows, indeed. Yeah. So, yeah, but that's been fun. And other than that, I think it's just nice to know that Ahsoka is still in production, I guess, or they've maybe have even finished shooting by now. Who knows? That Skeleton Crew show apparently has gone into production, gone in front of cameras. That's exciting.
Mm.
That guy's a talented filmmaker. That's going to be cool. The Acolyte, I'm now watching Russian Doll season 2, which is, you know, Leslie Headland, who's the showrunner for The Acolyte. That makes me excited because the approach of that show is so gritty and fast and like,
yeah,
it's cool, clever, as hell, it's
different,
man.
And yeah,
yes,
I still think they should put her, I've just forgotten her name for a second, Natasha Leo, they should put her in it, just herself, just as her. Like, I think when I had Laura from Force,
I would just love that.
She's just like, these Jedi's, what are you gonna do? Just like. Just do it. Like, who cares? She'd be hilarious. Like,
she'd be incredible. I would love that. So there's tons of stuff that I'm very excited for.
Mate, when we get some more stuff, you'll have to come back on. And especially if you're going to be in a friendly time zone, you know, when you officially are a resident of Australia again. But it's just been nice chatting. It's been a long time coming.
Absolutely. This is... really, it's been super fun to do this and finally talk a bit of Star Wars and
So where can people find Intercontinental Tom if they want to catch him online
So on Instagram I have an account called Star Wars Fun for Everyone. That is the name. Well, actually, the name of my podcast is Star Wars Fun for Everyone, Especially Me. do you know, like, that name was actually directly inspired by Steel, because it's basically an echo of From a Certain Point of View, namely mine. So that's kind of the inspiration there a little bit. The idea being that I'm going to make a podcast and I don't have to think about if it's entertaining for anyone. It's just something for me to do for me. So that's why it's Star Wars Fun for Everyone, especially me. So you can look up Star Wars Fun for Everyone on Instagram, on Twitter. I don't know. I'm on there quite a lot these lately because I'm
on holiday.
Yeah, I'm in, yeah. But it's. I think I'm Obi Tom Kenobi 76.
Awesome.
I think that's it.
Well, yeah. Well, everybody else, thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading the last episode that we had with Xanthi on. Everybody enjoyed their episode very much. And it's just good to back up another week later. So keep downloading. Leave a review if you get a chance to do that. That'd be awesome as well. And thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
See you soon.
Cheers. We'll be right back.